You seem hungry. Good thing your table is ready with Fatterday Omaha.
Fatterday Omaha.
Eat this.
And I'll just say, hey, this is Dave with Fatterday Omaha, and I am sitting in studio with two wonderful guests that have brought some really awesome things that we are going to talk about shortly here. So I have two wonderful folks from the Omaha Public Library, and that would be Amy Mather. Amy, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I am doing very well. And Martha Grinsbeck from the Omaha Public Library as well. Martha, how are you?
Great.
Perfect. So a couple of things. First, what are your titles or roles at the library? And then I'd like to talk real quick about how Amy and I met so we can establish why we are all here today.
Exactly. So Amy here, and I'm the partnerships manager for OPL.
And this is Martha. I am the genealogy and local history librarian for Omaha Public Library.
Wonderful. Well, first of all, thank you both for being here and for carrying various and sundry things into studio here. Now, Amy, you and I became acquainted at the MCC Culinary Alumni Family Dinner, which was a super event. And I was fortunate enough to sit at the table and during our introductions, found out that OPL has lots of cool food, restaurant, menu artifacts.
Absolutely. It was kind of so fun to have you sit right there because I love to upsell everything about the library at every single event that I am. And that was such an amazing family meal event. And it was my birthday too, so it was awesome. And so I knew who you were and immediately go into what gems are in our collection. So we brought a lot of gems to talk about today.
I don't even know where to start. Amy, you and I had talked about some older cookbooks and things that were in the area. I think you had mentioned we had a local black chef that had started a culinary school. And
yes.
Is this it here? Is this a, oh, we just
that is it.
Yeah,
this is fantastic. So yeah. So
and maybe what I can do is sort of frame like how all of this got started and why we kind of got into the menu business, if you.
So among other things,
exactly. Yeah. So Omaha Public Library ran a culinary conference. It was called Read It and Eat for 10 years, and during that process, so we would bring local chefs, and we would try to like connect people with like books and also like with the local culinary talent here, which we all know that Omaha has
awesome.
Just amazing restaurants and culinary talent. So throughout that 10 years, we knew that like New York Public Library started digitizing menus, and we were like, we're going to get into this business and start digitizing menus here because we have such amazing restaurants that we want to have it in our collection for, it is great for future chefs. It's great for, it could be great for future graphic designers, and it actually has been great for writers of like fiction. So sometimes they need to pour, if they're doing historical fiction, they need to like actually dig into what were people eating at that time. If I'm looking at a 1920s or 30s menu.
Yeah.
So this actually is
Jell-O. If we're talking about the 70s.
Yeah, we need aspic everywhere. So many great points there. And with the writing aspect of things, yeah, because you don't want to have like, well, we're not having pizza rolls in 1930 or whatever.
Exactly.
What did you have on a menu typically?
It was Melba toast, probably. My new obsession, because most menus do have Melba toast, and I feel like I need to have a Melba toast party at my house.
The new Christina, Melba toast.
Exactly. But it has been such an interesting way to like, how do we get menus? So I was constant, if I like to go out to eat a lot, so I would ask every restaurant that I would go to for a menu, and would often get it, which was great.
Yeah.
And we would often scour Facebook and whatnot. If we'd see a restaurant close, then we would reach out to them immediately to see if we can get the menu. And sometimes they would give us one, or sometimes they would give us several if they were a restaurant that was like the Bohemian Cafe, for example, when they closed, they gave us several editions, if you will, of their menu.
Okay.
Plus, when people hear that we have this menu collection or they see it online, then they're like, oh, I have this old menu. Maybe you want it because my kids won't want it.
Wow.
So that's also how we've grown the collection.
Yeah. And when we sunset the culinary conference in 2020, Omaha World Herald did a big article about that and talked about collecting menus. And I got no fewer than 100 calls of folks either wanting to donate menus or actually talk about the restaurants. Food is literally the ultimate connector in this community and beyond. I think it's the ultimate connector.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Everywhere. And so it was so lovely to hear people's stories. It's like first dates or restaurants that they would go to every single week with their family. So just that article alone really ramped up our ability to get a few more menus in our collection.
Right. And I mean, if you post something on Facebook, for example, as I did recently, we have a menu from the Chicago Bar. I thought it was a Chicago Bar, but it didn't have an address or anything like that. I posted the picture, and man, so suddenly I'm the top contributor on on this Facebook group because like 300 people commented, oh, I went there for a prom date. Oh, that was the best bar. Oh, this and that. Wow. People love to talk about those things, and it really brings back memories for them just seeing seeing the menus.
Yeah, a little bit of time travel, and maybe, you know, one of those things too where somebody's looking at the collection and didn't remember the place until they see the menu, and then they're like, oh yeah, now I remember this place. And like you said, all those things maybe that happened at that location surrounding
exactly that. And I mean, we have menus from places that have closed years and years ago, but people still remember them. Or we've got menus from places that were only open for like 5 years, and this is really all that's left of them, the only thing that people have to
like
remember
the French
them from.
Bulldog.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
So I got a menu from the French Bulldog, which was a local favorite of many folks in the Dundee community. It was definitely a great restaurant. So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And we also try to, one of my volunteers, she helps me research the restaurants because we like to have some information about the restaurants next to the, like in the record with the menu. And man, there's some interesting stories.
Okay, where would you like to start? Because painting a picture of what is before me, I have a single menu. I have a kind of a skinnier, long, almost looks like a CVS receipt because it's so long. A book. There we have something that looks like a clam or an oyster. We have a round card. We have a wooden plaque. Start me off. Tell me about some of these things.
Okay, Amy can talk about the wooden plaque because that's her favorite.
It really is my favorite. So this is a menu and from September 25th, 1911, 1015 Howard Street, which the address of that actually does not exist, but it is now La Bouillon. So that's interesting. So this is a menu all about oysters, the old reliable Tiger brand oysters. And it is a menu that was decoupaged on like this interesting piece of wood.
Yes.
And I got this from an estate sale. So I get a lot of estate sales, and the estate sale folks know that I'm always on the lookout for interesting things that I can purchase for our collection. And the Mark Volanek, who was the owner of Out of the Closet Estate Sales, said, Amy, I have this interesting menu. It's decoupage. It's very curious. Would you like it? And I was like, yes, yes, I would. So to me, what's so fascinating about this is like, okay, in 1911, oysters, today, oysters, in the same location, even though it's a different address.
Yeah.
They were a lot cheaper then.
What was our oyster price there way back when? Are there prices on the menu?
Well, yes, there is, except it's not, it's 60 C.
Cents.
Okay, that's what cents means. Okay, sorry, I should know. See, Martha's the expert here, not me.
That's because it's so cheap.
I've dealt in pennies for years.
Yeah. They just make it a little bit different. But it is so, so we just actually scanned this into our archives, right, which I'm super...
Haven't uploaded it yet.
But if you take a closer look, there's a lot of faded out like stuff that we need to capture before it fades out more.
And some of the text is quite faded and almost the same color as the wood.
Yes.
This almost looks like a what would have been a charcuterie board or a cutting board.
Maybe it wasn't ore. Decoupage.
On the back, there's somebody's name.
Yes.
Which I'm very curious to know who Mrs. Woodall was.
Mrs. Woodall and
a date
of
Although that's kind of funny because it is a wood plaque.
Yeah, true. Maybe that was her profession, was all wood, Mrs. Woodall. 812 looks like 77, maybe. So maybe that's when this was assembled. But yeah, that is so cool. And I love the fact that Omaha, Nebraska, and with the older state abbreviation of NEB before we went to NE. September 25th, 1911. And it's got quite a bit of character in addition to being decoupage on the board, because there's a large slash in the middle, which I don't know if that came from a oyster shucking knife or there was a fight around this menu, but there's definitely some history here.
And or decoupage just flair?
Maybe distressed ever so slightly for display purposes.
I love it.
And salmon for 13 cents.
Yes. It's
If only.
Wow. Let us have your orders, and they will be cared for promptly, carefully, and in a manner to please you. Yours very truly, Miller Cooper and Company, I'm thinking this says.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. There is the wooden piece. Now what do we have?
What would you like to go to next, Martha?
What do we want to go to next?
So I will just sidetrack here that we also, I have an eBay search. So Martha and I are like, I have eBay searches of Omaha menu, Nebraska menu. So we're constantly like looking for menus that we can afford because sometimes we can't afford them. But we did actually shell out a teeny bit more money on one menu. And Martha could talk a little bit more about this.
Oh, wow. Look
A menu that we haven't quite figured out how to scan without, we can't take it apart, but it was a dinner for the Omaha Board of Trade. It lists everybody. It's got a toast card, who is going to offer each toast.
Oh.
And the menu is built like it's in three different layers, and the top, which actually has the food that was offered on Tuesday, October 4th, 1887.
Oh my goodness.
It's on like a piece of silk.
Yeah, with a little fringe at the bottom and then tied at the top.
Yeah, tied with red and green ribbons at the top. So it's really
rare,
pretty.
Oh my goodness.
And rare, yes.
Very careful here.
We went over our budget for that.
Well over. And so I don't know what a archival menu costs, if I can ask.
Sure.
Roughly how much?
It can be anything. I mean, it can, $5. It can be $5. It can be $2.90. It can be given to us. Everybody who's listening.
Yes.
The edges here are decorative and like a little bit of gold. And October 4th, 1887, the menu script is gorgeous. And then nice tie into our other menu over here, because the first thing on the list is oysters. So we've got an oyster theme going.
They used to be super cheap. I mean, people, even poor people could afford them.
Right.
Yeah, and I love,
a landlocked state.
Right. Well, it's so we got oysters. We move to a soup, which is a clam chowder a la Hudson, fish, California salmon, sauce chutney, pomme de terre hollandaise, and I'm probably saying that wrong. My apologies to anybody that speaks. I'm assuming this is French. Filet of grouse with olives, asparagus, celery, Roman punch, and I love the following, cigarettes. That's on the menu, followed by a lobster salad mayonnaise, and ending with fruit, nuts and raisins, and then cigars and champagne. Quite the dinner. I'm going to
really rolled home after that one.
Wow, that's quite the dinner. And I love the toast card. How fun is that? Everyone. Oh, the mayor of the city of Omaha is on the list here. State of Nebraska, J.M. Woolworth, I think, and G.M. Hitchcock. This is quite the... quite the deal here. And is there a third page under this? Or is just the two? I want to be very... Oh, there is a third page.
Members of the Board of Trade.
Yeah.
Oh, members of the Board of Trade.
And wow. Just to give a little plug, our Omaha Public Library Foundation actually gives us money to buy the menus. So we have a menu digitization, like budget, and part of that actually goes out to buy them, and then we right. digitize them.
And sometimes people want to keep a menu, but we'll digitize it, put it on our website, but they take the menu back. They get to keep it. We get to show it. Everybody gets to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so anybody can go online and look at the ones that you've digitized already.
Yes,
absolutely. And find them. Is that yep. like, what's our web address for finding such a thing?
OmahaLibrary.org. And then if you look under the Explore category, you'll find it among historic images.
Yes.
We're also collecting matchboxes books because by accident, we just seem to be accumulating them also mostly from restaurants. And so we're like, okay, I guess we're collecting these.
And because they're not around anymore, because right. there's no right. smoking in restaurants. So that's it's not right. sort of yeah. like the extra stuff that would come along with like menus and matchbooks and like printed napkins or whatnot. So I also just scored a large yep. a container of matches that I brought and
yeah.
But we do take the matches out just in case we don't want to like
oh, yeah,
the
you
library
set
go,
your
poof.
Menus on fire. Yeah. 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 Well, yeah, right. Because restaurants would have given away a book of matches,
yeah.
Especially when
oh,
you
yeah.
got your Roman punch and cigarettes with your meal.
Roman punch all the way.
Well, what I love about this was, you know, Amy, when you and I had first talked to, you know, obviously Omaha Public Library. Books and,
right.
and movies and CDs and things. But I did not know that this type of artifact was also, you know, I would have thought maybe the Durham might have something
sure.
like that, but I did not expect the public library. This
yeah.
is super
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
And we collect postcards too.
Oh, cool. So
yeah, we have all kinds of good things.
Yes.
So donations, very welcome. Then,
very
to,
welcome.
To the collection.
Yes.
So, do you have a time range or type of menu or things like that? Because you probably don't need every week's Taco Bell special, but maybe if somebody wants to bring something, kind of what's the focus if somebody wants to donate?
Oh, any. I mean, we don't have any limits on, I mean, we have some as early as 1887, and we have ones for restaurants that are still in business mm-hmm. and, you know, menus from like a few years ago. We have a few from the time of the pandemic. Some of those restaurants have gone out of business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was a tough time.
So.
And since the pandemic, what's so interesting about menus that Martha and I lament about is that it's all QR code.
QR code.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that is no fun.
Loss. Yep. That is loss to the world, really.
Yeah. 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 It doesn't quite have the same feel.
No, there. Not no. at all. So bring no. back the paper menu, please, everyone.
Yeah.
Or the wooden menu.
Or the wooden menu. Decoupaged.
We'll decoupage it for you.
Yes. I guess keeping with our nautical theme, you have a menu that is not flat, is not decoupage, but it is instead a large mollusk. So, so how big around is this thing, do you think? And I don't know, eight
nine,
inches in diameter?
8 or 9 inches,
eight
yeah.
9 inches
yeah.
around. So this is
mollusk.
Yeah.
A mollusk.
I'm not
here.
Sure how long they kept up with those. We also have one that's on an oar,
uh-huh.
like for the Rusty Scupper, which that
oh,
one I think
name.
Was just a kind of a temporary gimmick, not what they normally handed out.
Oh, sure. Do you know if all the menus for this, is just to set the context here. So I have an oyster here or clam maybe. I'm assuming this is a piece of leather binding it together. And also to set the stage here, this is not two flat pieces of paper cut like an oyster. It has the full 3D shape and convex and concaveness of a shell. You can get featured in the Fish Pier West The Captain's Cocktail, your own favorite, king size at 90 cents. And let's see, bucket of steamed clams, cup of broth drawn butter for $2.50. Holy cow.
Yeah. I think this was from the 70s.
It feels like it's from the 70s
yes.
for sure.
Mm-hmm. We've got a German chocolate cake for 50 cents. And a fisherman's platter includes boiled stuffed fresh lobster, crab leg, scallops, shrimp, fried oyster, clams casino. There's a good tip off there for a very large sum of $5.95.
Yes, and so much seafood in the middle of the country.
Completely landlocked. Yes. Yes. Well, according to this, so the seafood served you is Boston fresh and San Francisco succulent, flown, I don't know about this description and an adjective, but we're going to go for it, flown dripping wet daily from New England for jet age freshness. My goodness.
That is hilarious.
We're going to have to start.
I'd feel better if ice was mentioned.
Because it could just
dripping
be
wet. It's just like
it's just humid. Yes. Fish Pier West. The seafood served you is Boston fresh and San Francisco succulent, flown dripping wet daily from New England for jet age freshness. Oh my goodness! There's the ad and the Seven Seas Kebab. My heavens. Yes, we have all entrees served with baked or French fried potatoes, tossed salad, French or Italian, and Thousand Island dressing. Roquefort is 25 cents extra. What a fun menu.
Yes, and that was donated by Oliver Pollack, who was a professor at UNO, was very active in history, writing history, and he still does from California. Lives in California now, but he still writes to us often.
What a cool deal. Wines on the back, sparkling wines, dessert wines, and a lift before dinner, our cocktail of sherry for 40 cents. What a deal. Do we happen to know where Fish Pier West Prom Town House
That's
was?
That's part of the research that we do, and I'm sure,
I think we do. We've got a spreadsheet where we have all our research, and I should have checked before I brought this, but
that's okay. This will give people some interesting things to go look up or inquire about.
It truly is like unearthing a mystery with each of these menus, which is what Martha was talking about earlier, about asking the question about the Chicago bar, and then 300 responses later. We have it, which I love.
Yes.
That's how we can get crowdsource the information about the menu.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is next? Is there many gifts before us here?
Should we talk about cookbooks?
Yeah,
let's do it.
So one thing, this was very local. And this was something I blogged about back in 2012 when I was still blogging. But we found it in our collection, and I got very curious about Hildegard Schult, who had a cake decorating school. She taught people how to decorate cakes. And after I did research on her, and this has her designs in it, and she later published a slightly more finished looking book, because you can see it on Amazon. So I think this was an early version. After I did some research on her and found out more about her and blogged about it, I got so many responses from people saying, I knew her. She was a wonderful woman. I learned how to decorate cakes or cookies, or she did a lot of really interesting things. And some of her descendants also contacted me. So, I mean, each time something like this comes up, it is just such a community connector. Mm-hmm. Everybody has something to say about it, shares information, and I just love that.
That's awesome. So this one, yet another format. This one almost looks like a sketch pad. So it's bound at the top. And The Art of Decorating by Hildegard Schult. And this is copyright 1950. And the pages inside, and you will both have to help me here, but the purple color reminds me of a mimeograph or risograph or something that.
It does look like that. That's why I think this may have been sort of a home self-published.
Yeah.
I mean, she had a copyright and everything for it.
And beautiful illustrations. And there's a baby announcement cake or cake iced in baby blue, and it has a stork and it has a little safety pins that are open and says welcome baby. And she's very, very detailed, not only in the illustrations, but looks like placement of the decorations and measurements. And this one is a baby cake that has an allowance. If you have twins, she's got you covered there. And at the beginning, there's different, looks like piping patterns there as well, heart scroll, baby border, side of cake, and these number designations. I wonder if those are piping tip numbers. I'm not an expert baker or even a great amateur baker for that matter. Not sure there, But wow, the Schultz School of Cake Decorations dedicated to the Bakers of America. So do we know anything about Hildegard? Just the...
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes. In fact, I wrote it all on my blog. And I just found this book in our sort of in a box of donations, I assume,
yeah.
books that were not in our catalog or anything. Now this is in our catalog. It's in our Nebraska reference collection. But so I went and, you know, researched her. She was just a person who really liked to decorate cakes. Her husband was a pharmacist at O'Brien Drugs, and they had met at pharmacy school. So that's Aww. What she started out with. But she taught lessons in cake decorating, and eventually sort of it became the Schultz School of Cake Decorating, and it even made it into the city directory that
wow.
way. And she, her husband passed away in 1967, but she carried on with her creative pursuits, and she was interviewed by the Omaha World Herald in 1972. And though she claimed to be retired, she was that year presented with a life membership in the International Cake Exploration Societe, which I was like, what is that?
Yeah, right?
That's the thing. Every single thing you research leads you down one more rabbit trail.
It's like that Wikipedia thing where you start looking, oh, click on this and keep going.
Exactly. Yes, yes. And then in the end, you're like, what did I want to know?
Yeah, so she went to Cordon Bleu, right?
Yes, I think so.
Yes, so is it right in, yeah. And so it's,
yeah, she was an expert chef.
Yeah.
And she, you can also see, you used to be able to check this book out.
Oh my goodness, there's
Not
library,
anymore.
Library stamps from 1940 in here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, we use a different system for checking out now.
You run
so
out of room.
You know.
Copyright 1939.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this book is not just, it's kind of like Mrs. Beaton's, if you're into historical cookbooks or one of those. It's not just about cooking, but like how to manage your household, how to have, I've got a cookbook at home, the Settlement Cookbook, that explains how to cook dinner for 100 people, things like that. And this is also full of sort of helpful information in addition to basically Cordon Bleu type recipes.
Right.
I'd like to read just a paragraph from briefly glancing at the foreword here. If the best cookery is to be attained, we must share our knowledge and not be like the cook of whom her friends remarked when she had passed to the great beyond. Here lies a wonderful cook who has taken so much pleasure out of life with her. Mm-hmm. And so that's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting book. And I think it's, I mean, we just now have, we have two women here. We're talking about two different women who's entrepreneurs who started a cake decorating business and a cooking school, which is so fascinating. And I love that. I love it because it's, again, it's sort of like the support of like how important food and connecting people to food it is in Omaha and what that means for our community.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she lived in North Omaha. She's an African-American woman, so she had, she didn't have as easy a time as she would have as, say, a white man.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she had local fame.
And so this is 1939. I'm guessing getting something published as a black woman in 1939 might have been, unfortunately, very challenging. And mm-hmm. so to have that out there. And I love the breakdown here, too. In the foreword, the author, she says how she broke down the book, but it starts with novice cooks and facts every cook should know. So it sounds like it's approachable by people of many different skill sets as well.
Right.
Do we know anything else about her? How long the cooking school ran? Or maybe that's a whole nother research project. I don't know.
The Durham probably has that.
Cool. That's fair.
I know. I remember kind of a year, but I don't think I could, state it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Oh.
She wasn't, like, there's not a lot of pictures of her or anything
right.
like that.
Oh, so we're not.
So
even...
there's not. Yeah, but the Durham did manage to find what they could.
Well, interesting. And tying back to some previous dishes, we were talking about the 70s, there is a recipe in here for artichoke and asparagus aspic.
Excellent.
A good Omaha tie-in, Exarban salad,
yes,
which contains tomatoes, course. Asparagus tips, beets, green peppers, carrots, mayonnaise, red and green coloring. Interesting. Maybe red and green coloring lettuce. Maybe that's all one thing, and you must splice that out. But ice cream pies with meringue sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Eggnog pie sounds good.
With all of these books and menus, I just think it would be, to me, it's always the idea of trying to recreate it. And Martha's actually does a little bit of that for our...
I've tried making things out of some of our old cookbooks, especially we have so many cookbooks from church groups or, you know, junior league or all sorts of, like, when we started this, I had no idea so many places made cookbooks and sometimes more than one. I thought, well, let's see how those recipes are. And I have made a few of them to bring into work. Some of them are good.
Some of them are like, you just like, okay, that was different.
Some of them, yes. I mean, I don't think you want to put liverwurst in Jello. That's just.
Ooh. Yeah, no.
That's just, yeah. Yes.
But community cookbooks are huge,
yes,
everywhere. And I think that's a wealth of information about families. It's another genealogy trail that folks can do.
Right,
to, like,
because they usually would say who submitted the recipes. And
yeah,
often it's going back a ways. It's often Mrs. John Woolworth or whatever. But and if you notice, this cookbook here is by Mrs. Mahamet.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't give her first name.
Oh yeah, Mrs. T. Mahamet.
So everybody is sort of Mrs. or whatever. Mrs. Gilbert Johnson in this one. I'm looking at Crumbs of Comfort, Favorite Recipes of the Ladies of Our Savior's Lutheran Church, Omaha, Nebraska. What I love about this one, first of all, it's got local advertisements in it.
Oh, fun.
So Bernstein Grocery Company, for example, St. Mary's at 18th Street. And also, people write, whoever owned this cookbook, people write their own recipes in it.
Cool.
And so it's like this record of so many people. Besides, you know, the recipe provided by Alice Myers, you have somebody else's has written Mrs. Bjornholm's sponge cake, and she's got all the ingredients there.
How fun. And Amy, when we were talking at MCC, that was another thing I was telling you was kind of a side project for Fatterday, was bringing some recipes back that maybe haven't been cooked for a while. And so what a wealth of information tying
yes.
local
yeah.
here to these things. Oh, my
yeah.
goodness.
One problem with some of the earlier cookbooks is they assumed everybody knows how to make a cake or how to do certain things. So they wouldn't necessarily go into great detail about... There would either be just the ingredients and not tell you what to do with them, or they would say, one recipe that I made, it said, take butter the size of an egg. And that was the measurement. And I'm like, how big an egg? Because, you know, the large and extra large to me seem pretty small.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a whole level of anxiety in baking.
The advertisements in here. So we have for economical transportation, Chevrolet Sales and Service, Road Sales Corporation, 6118 Military Avenue. I also really like this one. Satin ice cream, rich and smooth, Coca-Cola, not Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola Bottling Company, 1423 North 18th Street, Webster. Oh, I'm phone number maybe?
Yes.
Webster 0406 before
yep.
there were
yep.
longer phone
yep.
numbers.
So before the, I think it was 1962 or so that they stopped having those telephone exchange prefixes.
Wow. Do we have a date on Crumbs of Comfort
here? I think that one's 1940.
So we could call with just that 4-digit extension. I love the modern Danish.
Let's
bakery.
Call them up.
Right, let's see. Can I call the, wow, is there an operator anymore? And it's like, I need Webster 0406. I'm like, what are you talking about? Did you Google it first? Wow. Jelly beets, sweet potato fluff, buttered vegetables, all sorts of things. And apparently Knox Gelatin must have donated a lot here, because the top of almost every page On the left side here, I have on page 120, Knox gelatin is economical. One package makes 4 pints of jelly. And then on the very next page, desserts can be made in a short time with Knox gelatin. They're very pervasive in this book here.
Sponsored by...
Oh, I could read through the advertisements all day. I will leave with this one here of clean up and disinfect with Killabug. great names. And this one is bound in paper? Is that leather? It's textured. Favorite recipes.
It does look like leather.
It really does. Yeah. It's got some good character to it. Talk to me about this one that sort of looks like a very large receipt here, but this is a rather interesting fold on this paper.
Yes, bill of fare. Yes, yes. This was from the Steam Shed restaurant, which was at 9414 Ida Street, Omaha, Nebraska. And what I like about it is, once again, it's kind of a gimmicky presentation because it looks like you would sort of tear off strips of it or something because it's like three long pieces stapled together, each one, and they're numbered 1, 2, 3. At the top, it says, you're invited to take a leisurely journey by way of creative cuisine and potable spirits. And then it lists the roast prime ribs of beef, only $5.50.
Ooh, deal.
First class for lady travelers, which is the same as above, but thinly sliced. A caboose cut, a whiskey chicken, created by America's pioneer of the railroad cook tents in the early West. Lightly flavored with brandy, served on rice pilaf. I wasn't able to figure out exactly what the deal is with the different pages. I mean, the last one is side trips a la carte. And they've got additional freight being coffee, tea, and milk.
We carried the railroad theme all the way.
Yes, exactly. Steam Shed. And what I like about this is because I spend so much time trying to figure out when restaurants came and went and to date the menus. And I know it's not like that important sometimes, but I just like to know.
Yeah.
I'm a librarian. So anyway, so this one says Steam Shed established 1973. So there we have it.
They've got
a little history of it. From its humble beginnings as a half-serious suggestion 3 years ago, the restaurant you see now was actually put under construction in October of 1972. The owners of the Steam Shed are all local people whose faith in the rapid growth of Omaha prompted them to select this setting, the site of a farm and crops until 1972. As much as possible, authentic railroad artifacts were used throughout the building. I like that. Half my cataloging work is done.
Right? They helped you out there.
Yes.
So if you're designing any new menus out there, put some dates on it.
Yes, and at least put your address, because that was my problem with the Chicago Bar.
Oh.
It had no address or anything. In fact, the front just said Chicago. It didn't even say bar. It was like their bar food menu. So inside it was sort of from the Chicago Grill or something. And I was like, I think this could be the Chicago, but because we have some menus from all around the country, we try to mostly stick to Nebraska, but we have some others, you know, so how are you gonna know?
Right, the character, like you said, in this particular menu for bill of fare here, and at let's see, what was our restaurant? Is that the actual restaurant name? Is Bill of Fare?
No, it's
Steam Shed. There we go. Yes, thank you. So this is the Bill of Fare. Got it.
Right.
And
sort of cute railroad theme throughout.
Yes, and I asked to see our wine list. Some bottles direct by rail from Europe. Now, I'm not a geography expert, but I'm thinking there's some water in the way there somewhere. But you know, hey.
That is a long bridge.
There's that land bridge that was talked about. Maybe there was tracks up there, and we just didn't know. And please, no cigar smoking while the train is standing at the station. I wonder how that was enforced exactly in the restaurant, but we may never know. So
I know. So you learn so much from some menus. Tell you so much, even in just. Little bits like that, the sort of themes they have or the types of food that they have. And others are more generic, harder to classify.
This one has a ton of character. I like our New York steak here, which is especially cut by our chief engineer. So that, all right.
Of course.
I would rather have my food cut by a chef.
I think so. I'm kind of concerned that you had mentioned in reading the description here that there are railroad artifacts throughout the restaurant. I'm hoping they were not also used in the food preparation process because there might be some oil, grease, and rust involved. Maybe some coal.
Yes. But,
okay, so now, Amy, you've got one sitting next to you. I think this is the one that you had possibly carried
Yes, so tell me about this one. Well, Martha was like, I haven't seen it, Minyu. And I was like, I haven't brought it over to you.
Uh-oh.
So when I do buy from eBay, because my eBay account just sends it to my house, and I just bring it to work. So this is a Happy New Year menu from Union Station Restaurant in Omaha.
Fun.
And I'm not sure what year it is, but they have two different menus. Like two sets of menus on one menu on one page. So it looks like it's like the cheaper menu and then the more expensive menu. Mm-hmm. And you know this by, and it's somebody, I don't know if it was a chef, either put notes on it as chefs would do, because you see like the cream of chicken with noodles, and then you see handwritten Melba toast, which obsessed with the Melba toast. But I'm going to just let you look at that. And it's kind of interesting to see in the prices. It's not that big of a difference, but perhaps it was a huge difference to anybody coming to dine with them.
Yes, yes. And in fact, a huge increase between the lower price there at $1 and the expensive at $1.50. But
right.
I suppose percentage-wise for their, wow, my goodness. We have, oysters are back. We have some oysters on the shell. Fresh crab meat cocktail, crisp celery curls. Oh, yeah, I like the chef notes in there. Radishes, Melba toast, Dungeness crab. Wow, this all sounds amazing. I wonder if you got everything for $1. Or you probably chose your item. Oh, I wonder if this person ordered off of this menu, because I see check marks by the fresh meat cocktail, and there isn't one by the oysters. So, and then I wonder,
maybe that's what it means.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we're figuring out the story now.
Roast turkey, candy. Oh, yes, because we have sides here. Candied sweet potatoes and Brussels sprouts are checked, whereas whipped cream potatoes and garden fresh peas are not. Chef's salad and a cream de menthe parfait. Sounds good. Although, I don't know why they didn't either check the fresh pumpkin pie or the frozen eggnog ice cream, because that sounds really good.
It does.
Yes, and out of coffee, tea, milk, and orangeade, they went for apple cider here, and they must have ordered off of the less expensive side, because on the right side, nothing is checked.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, but you could have got Chinese pheasant, buttermilk fed spring chicken, all sorts of good stuff here, and after dinner mints.
Of course.
Of course, yes.
Oh, but fear not, Melba toast was available also on the expensive side of the menu as well. So
everyone is entitled to Melba toast.
Yes. Now, Union Station restaurant, I'm assuming restaurant within Union Station here.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
We also have a menu or two for Union Pacific, like the menu you would have got on the train.
On the train.
Yeah. Yeah. We collect.
And as well as United Airlines.
Yeah, as postcards.
Postcards.
Oh,
yeah.
Fun.
You know, they have to prepare the food for an airplane somewhere. And
sure.
There was a big kitchen here. And Omaha chefs prepared those or designed those menus and designed what would be on, what would be served in those days when you actually got food on an airplane.
And when it was considered really posh.
Yes, the chefs were like graduates of fancy Swiss cooking schools.
Wow.
So
it's not your bagged pretzels now.
Yeah. If we're talking about chefs, we have one more thing.
Please.
This is a chef's book that, and I'm not sure where we got it is the thing, but it belonged to Rinaldo Sibilia. He was a chef who worked in the Omaha Athletic Club for many, many, many years. He also did a stint at the old Henshaw Hotel on 1509 Farnham Street and worked for a little while in the Blackstone Hotel in the Omaha Country Club.
Oh, wow.
But most of his time was at the athletic club. And it's really interesting because this is where he planned the menus, what they would cost, what the ingredients would be.
I'm wondering if Brian O'Malley has seen this, and I'm not sure.
I don't know, maybe.
So, Brian, if you're listening, email me. Come
give Amy a holler. And so, wow. So, yeah, this is all handwritten. The outside says cash on the front. So,
it's a standard ledger that you could buy in a stationery store.
So, as you're archiving these, yes. You know, something like the single page probably is a hair easier to scan. But do you just unfold it and scan it? Or is there any, how does it get put together so it is cohesive?
About your awesome giant scanner.
Yeah, so we have an excellent flatbed scanner. So if the menu is not larger than ledger size, we usually use that because most menus are not a problem to, you know, put face down on this. If it's too large or such like the ledger you're holding, we wouldn't want to smash it face down.
Right.
We have a big professional style book eye. It's a scanner that you can lay things down face up. And it's also larger than our flatbed. So we can scan things that are too delicate to scan otherwise and just turn the pages, scan, turn the page, scan.
Well, these are very detailed notes and costing and...
Yes, and very dense. I was thinking, did he not want to buy another ledger?
There's no space between almost anything.
But, he was an immigrant from Ticino, Italy. He arrived in 1912 and started out... he started out as a dishwasher at the Henschen Hotel.
Oh, fun.
He was probably thrifty by nature.
Oh, and just didn't want to...
He still had space left at the end.
Last page here, page 72... 24-35. I don't know if that's number.
1935.
1935. Okay, very good. Oh, thank you. June. There we go. 24-35. Fresh vegetable soup was the last entry from Chef here on page 72.
So he probably did get another book, or maybe he just got a nice bullet journal because he worked at the Athletic Club it closed in 1970. He did many more menus after the 30s.
Two more artifacts I see on the table here. We have one, it looks like a single page. Oh, from the Brandeis building, Basement Luncheonette. So what do we know about this one besides
they just typed it.
That's it.
And that's probably what they did every day because I think that was a daily menu, wasn't it? Does it have,
Does look daily, yes. Enjoy a delicious, quote, hot dog, end quote, sandwich. Okay. So, do we have a date on this? Because maybe that is a... Oh, yes, we do. Friday, May 2nd, 1941. Could this have been the origin of the is a hot dog a sandwich debate? With chow chow relish or meat sauce, chopped onions, selective luncheon, super tomato juice. We have baked... Wow, I can't talk. That's what happens when you combine baked and filet is baked. baked filet of haddock and lemon butter for 25 cents. But yeah, in the, that inked, hand-typed format here.
Yeah, well, this probably was mimeographed, actually.
Oh, okay, okay.
Right? So yeah, that's where you get that purple type.
That purple color.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, hot off the grill, genuine minced beef. I don't want that ingenuine or ingenuous beef there. Steak made, wow, how fun, Fountain Club. So the Brandeis building, what, 16th, 18th? Or is it?
Right.
16th, okay. Yeah, I'm assuming that's where this originated from?
Yeah, wow. And they had, this would have been where you sort of stopped in for lunch. It was just their kind of casual, like if you've ever been to, I still remember going to Woolworth's kind of lunch counter.
Oh, sure.
In San Francisco. And this would have been the same kind of thing, I think, because the Brandeis also had a much fancier restaurant upstairs. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I will leave this Brandeis menu with two notes. One, they serve standard grade milk. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but I suppose since this is the Brandeis basement luncheonette, quote, in the bargain basement, maybe that's where you have the standard grade. Maybe you have to go upstairs for the extra
premium
grade. But I would really like to eat for 15 cents the Town Tattle Burger the Third sandwich. I don't know what's on it, but boy, it's intriguing. So
Maybe we'll hear from somebody that has eaten it.
I bet we will.
This is awesome. Yes, please do contact either the library or Fatterday Omaha with information if you have eaten at any of these places, or you're like, hey, I had the Town Tattle Burger and it was the best.
Or
it was the worst. We have one more smaller artifact here that says Thanksgiving Day, and looks like maybe there's a military tie in here. So please.
Yep. So that was the menu that's Company D of the 17th U.S. Infantry at Fort Crook had for their festive dinner in 1934.
Oh my goodness.
And it's got everything that they ate, and it was presided over by the mess sergeant, and it lists the cooks who are also military people.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Company D, 17th U.S. Infantry, Fort Crook, Nebraska.
Nicely tied with a cord at the side.
It is a nice blue cord there, yeah. A knot that is better than I could make because it is perfectly aligned vertically with the menu here. We have roast turkey and, you know, going full circle from where we started.
Oysters.
Oysters. Not just oysters, but your oyster stew and oyster dressing. Oysters are happening. Scalloped corn butter Parker House rolls. I'd be curious to see what that is. Pumpkin pie, devil's food cake, sweet milk. And at the bottom, you can also get cigarettes with your meal and cigars in addition to your sweet pickles and giblet gravy. Wow. Sergeant Charles E. Scheffler, cooks PFC, Private First Class, maybe? I don't know.
I think so.
R.L. Lind and PFC H.J. Folkert. I wonder if there are any relatives of any of these folks in the area that may be listening here. And then on the inside, roster, commanding first sergeant, sergeants, corporals, private first class, privates. Oh, interesting. Much like our menu that had our dollar price point and our $1.50 price point earlier, under the private section here, Ray F. Buffington has a check mark next to his name. I wonder if that's whose menu this was.
It was.
That's very interesting. There's so much history before me. Let's see, our oldest one that I think we had was 1887.
Right.
And then I think we brought it all the way up to somewhere in the 70s somewhere here.
Probably, yes.
And my goodness, well, before we kind of wind it down and sign it off, was there anything in the awesome box that you brought that you wanted to mention?
Do you have the Trans-Mississippi?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so we have one more book to show you.
Excellent.
And this, I was talking about the sort of, well, Mrs. Mahomet's book, which is also gives you sort of how to hold a dinner, like things beyond just cooking the food.
Yeah.
This Trans-Mississippi Homemaker, what is it called again?
Yeah, no, that's it.
David, back
you got the whole title, Trans-Mississippi
Yes, from
Homemaker.
1898, which is when the Trans-Mississippian International Exposition happened here in Omaha, the Omaha World Fair. And this book, actually, I only discovered that today when I got it off the shelf. I noticed that it was given to us to the library. I was not alive in 1898, let there be no mistake. It was given to the library by Clara Rosewater, who most people have heard of Edward Rosewater, who was the editor of the Omaha Bee and very sort of active and famous in politics, and was also extremely feisty and got into fights with people. So he's kind of colorful. And his brother, Charles, the lesser known brother, was married to Clara. And so this was her book.
Yes, The Gift of Clara Rosewater, Omaha here. Two things I'll read, having just very briefly paged for it. But the introduction is in a neat kind of old English typeface. To our daughters, the homemakers of the future, this book is dedicated by their loving mothers, which I think is beautiful. And then the preface here by Mary Moody Pugh, P-P-U-G-H.
I think you pronounced that pew.
Thank you.
I've come across that elsewhere.
I appreciate that very much. The first two paragraphs are interesting because I like the kind of blending of science here. The preface says, in presenting our book to the housekeepers of the West, we do not claim anything striking, new, or original for it. The formulas are such as have been worked out by practical chemists and adopted into everyday use in the kitchen laboratories of our women. How cool.
And practical.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. My goodness. What a neat book. Yeah. Well, this has been so fun. And I know you have more, and we could probably talk for a much longer time, and I would be interested in everything. But for our listeners out there, if they would like to see or experience some of these artifacts, I know we talked a little bit about at the beginning here of our conversation, but what's the best way for somebody to come and see these things?
All they have to do is come to the Genealogy and Local History Room, which is currently at 3020 South 84th Street, which is the old Shopko building. Mm-hmm. Those of you who have been in Omaha for a while. We're open every single day, including Sunday from 1 to 5. And all you have to do is ask, and we can bring these things out to show you. Our cookbooks are all in our online catalog, which you can access at omahalibrary.org. The menus, I've got a spreadsheet of all the menus, but we have hundreds, but we've only got about 130 up scanned and up on our website.
Gotcha.
So far, because mainly it's cataloging them that takes a while.
Have a mission before you.
But yes, anybody who's interested, like, do you happen to have a menu from the old English room or whatever, just ask, and if we have it, we'll know.
And if you have a menu out there and you want to part with it for our collection, we'd be happy to take it. And or if you don't want to part with it, we'd love to digitize it.
Yes.
Fantastic. And then it can be taken care of by the library, and then you can visit it whenever you want, as others could as well.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. We will put it in an archival folder.
That's for sure. Because if you think about it, at Omaha Public Library, like all public libraries, we're curating our community. We want to keep doing that.
Right. And it's fine if it's spattered with gravy or somebody's written on it. We got quite a few menus from Howard Hamilton, who is a historian, a longtime historian here in Omaha. And he wrote on all the menus that we got from him, he wrote what day he went. I really appreciate that too. What day he went, who he went with, and how much he paid, and what he chose, what he ate.
Wow.
We love things like that.
Yes. We love it all.
Thank you so much for bringing literally these treasures of Omaha and history in here for me to see and hopefully share out there. And I hope that those who listen will check these out or donate or experience it, because this has been a ton of fun. And thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk with me and show me these things. It's wonderful.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, this was so much fun.
It was fun.
Wonderful.
And if anybody just wants to come to the Genealogy and Local History Room and talk about menus, that's fine too.
Please don't even have
to bring anything.
Perfect. All right. Well, I think there's nothing else that we can do but probably close our conversation down and go out for oysters and Melba toast then. And with that, we will sign it off on Fatterday Omaha. This is Dave Zorko. And as we say, until we eat again, stay hungry. Bye.
Our show is recorded and produced by Fatterday Omaha. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, as well as email fatterdayomaha@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and stay hungry.
Fatterday Omaha.
Eat this.